and welcome to all of our two- and four-legged listeners. Welcome back to What the Bark, the Rightpaw podcast. I'm Nathan from Rightpaw, and joining me as always is Genetic George from Orivet. Welcome back, George.
Hey, Nathan. Yes, good to be back.
Good to be back. After a couple of weeks off, we have been gone really deep into our genetic series as well. We've gone from color to code, and we've really I think we've done a good job with sort of the basics of DNA education. I've had a good time on those pods.
Have you enjoyed listening to them, Nathan?
I have. I listened back as well, and we've had some great feedback from listeners too.
Yes, yes. And just for those, I've just come back from an ISAG conference too, sort of spending 8 days with academics and being involved on some of the comparison tests, which I could maybe talk about in another session, but I've come back rejuvenated. Academically reading, I'm just so fresh and glad.
You're bursting with knowledge.
That's right. It's good when you start to travel and talk to other academics and come back. And good news is that Orivet is doing things really, really well.
Very good.
We always punch above our weight because we're there talking to European labs and there's US labs, and they sort of don't really know much about what happens down in Australia. So it's always good.
You're flying the flag for the battlers.
That's right. And they always sort of go back and Google Orivet and are surprised to know that there's an Australian local testing organisation that does a lot of samples and does it very, very well. So,
yeah. And I heard you even gave a talk as well.
Two talks, Nate.
Two talks. What did you talk about?
Well, I gave, as Judy Lab, I gave my talk to the companion animal comparison results and then the forensics comparison results, and the feedback was they loved George, they loved the Australian. Everyone walked out thinking, wow, this guy's just changed the way presentations are. weren't boring academic presentations.
I can't imagine you doing one of those.
And unfortunately, as a Judy Lab person, I broke the rules, but everyone was happy that I broke the rules because I challenged them in different ways. So the forensics group is loving what I've proposed, and moving forward in 2025, which will be in South Korea, the comparison tests are going to change the way they are. But a shout out to everyone on the committees, all that helped. Yes, 2025, Korea, South Korea, Nathan, maybe.
There you go, book your tickets.
Yeah, you could come along.
Oh, that'd be great. I think it'd be an awesome chance to meet some other genetic aficionados. And I'm sure you talked about the podcast.
Oh, yes, Genetic George, What the Bark, the whole lot. They thought podcast.
They got dropped into the every talk.
Anytime I can, Nathan. But, what we've done today is we've put together a topic, having heard back from some of our listeners about what they'd like to hear and what they'd like us to talk about.
Yeah, we put the call out to a few of our listeners, and you're always welcome to email in, whether it's george@orivet.com or nathan@rightpaw.com.au, and tell us what you want to hear about. And actually, a big shout out to Wendy Warren, who is actually a Rightpaw breeder and also Orivet client as well. And she emailed in some great suggestions, a couple actually, which we're going to look into. But one in particular was actually about dogs and breeding limits, and it was actually because of a few stories that have popped up in the last couple of months, some sad stories in fact, about some particular breeders that have been charged with animal welfare breaches, and there's been some RSPCA seizures, and you sort of see those stories happen a bit. And we thought, why not talk about this as a topic and really sort of set the record straight on breeding limits, because it's a bit of a confusing topic, and a lot of owners don't really know what that looks like or what it should look like.
So yeah, breeding limit. Nathan, have you done any background here? What are the breeding limits? And let's stick with the ANKC. What do they recommend for breeding a bitch? What is the recommendation?
Well, this is the thing. We're starting out with a very tricky topic, because there is a bit of a difference between what some of the associations recommend and then what also the state guidelines are, because Australia is not never been one to be simple. Every state is different, and that makes it quite difficult, because it does vary depending on where you live. But if we were to sort of generalize, you would say that the sort of general is around no more than 2 litters in an 18-month period. And that tends to sort of hold true for most states. There are some states which are a little bit more strict. So for example, New South Wales, funnily enough, 2 in 2 years, so just a little bit more strict. And actually, the strictest is the ACT, funnily enough. ACT, you wouldn't think it, but you know, politicians clearly down there, but that is actually the most strict, and it's a 1 litre every 18 months. So that is the most strict.
Most of this is around really the health of the bitch, isn't it, really, when you look at it? You know, unfortunately, the male doesn't really have any health or any limitations. It's really...
The male isn't involved too often. So we're talking mainly about the bitches, the dams here.
And what is the recommended age? What's the youngest you can start breeding from a bitch here?
Yeah, so again, really good question. And what we've found, again, is that there is a little bit of a difference here between the state guidelines and the ANKC guidelines. And also there's a bit of a difference between small breeds and larger breeds, because often a lot of the larger breeds take a little bit longer to develop. Their sort of first heat tends to be a little bit later. But if we're looking again at the sort of state minimums, generally it is always on the second heat. So you would never breed a dam on her first heat, because generally that could often be younger than 12 months. And it could also, you know, they're not necessarily fully mature yet. So first heat is always, you know, very much off the table. And generally they say once they're older than 12 months. So most state guidelines will say the dam has to be older than 12 months and at least on their second heat. That's for small breeds. For a larger breed, generally you're looking more at 18 months. So, you know, there's a big difference between a Dachshund and a Great Dane, and you have to treat them differently as well. So it does vary, but generally 12 months for small breeds, 18 months for larger breeds. ANKC can be a little bit stricter. You know, they have a higher limit than the state guidelines. So they tend to be, you know, sort of 6 months older than that, or sometimes 12 months older than that.
So our recommendation is just Google breeding recommendations. There's an ANKC link with the PDF. I think it's about 23 odd pages that you could see as your guideline. There's going to be other associations that are going to have other guidelines. And from what I've read on the ANKC, there's some excellent reference material, recommended reading, which is really good, and especially one book that they still refer to as the Bible, and it's called Dogs and How to Breed Them by the author is Hilary Harmer.
Ah, very good. Yeah, I mean, the science in this space, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, you know, there's a lot of research in this space, and even some new research that's been coming out, which has potentially even sort of starting to contradict a little bit about what the state guidelines are saying. So we'll drop that teaser in and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But there is, yeah, a lot of rich literature on this, and yeah, it's a fascinating space. But I think that the article which prompted this was actually a story that came out through the ABC. It was actually back in just the end of sort of May, early June. And it was about a breeder in Tasmania, actually, a breeder of Labradoodles, who were allegedly, of course, this is still, you know, ongoing discussions, but they're due to face court actually in the next month about some accusations or allegations that they've been overbreeding and, you know, potentially overbreeding their female dogs. And the allegation, one dog in particular had 6 litters in just under a 2 year period, which, you know, obviously well above the 2 in 18 months that, you know, is the
remember the story. It sort of created a lot of discussion over social media, like it always did. First thing people wanted to find out is who was this breeder a member of, blah, blah, blah. We don't know who it was that they were a member of. All we know is, according to the article, it was a Tasmanian Labradoodle breeder. Is that right, Nath?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what the ABC is telling us. And obviously, you know, this is still playing out in discussions as well. But you know, this particular breeder, yeah, they had a larger number of female dogs, potentially up to 45 active female dogs are currently listed on the site. So, you know, again, when you're dealing with that many breeds and that many, you know, dogs as well, active dogs, it requires a lot of management. And, you know, there's discussions around whether there's a number that's too many. But you know, that was the issue. And the RSPCA has brought those sort of charges against this particular breeder.
It was basically, well, it reads that they were sort of having more than two litters on this in this 18-month period. Is
that's the crux of it. That's the crux of it for a number of their dogs. And that's sort of the, you know, the real breach. Apparently 70 counts of breaching that act.
And it falls into this category of not ensuring that your bitch is in your care or charge, did not meet this litter limitation of 18-month period. This is what the document stated. So the RSPCA were the organisation
that brought the charges against. And and, you know, it all comes back to, you know, why do we have these limits in place? And it's because ultimately it's about trying to ensure that the females have adequate time to recover from the last pregnancy before breeding them again. And of course, you know, every dog is different. Every dog is unique and, you know, will have their own recovery period. And you should discuss that with your vet as a breeder. But that's why we have the guidelines and the legislation in place, which is, you know, to protect dogs from overbreeding.
And I think the bit that stood out to me, Nathan, you know, me, I'm always looking at the finer detail, was that there was a dog called Barbie who had six litters between October 2020 and September 22. And the bit that I liked is Barbie. Barbie's very popular at the moment, the movie, you've got to get out there, but appropriately named Barbie. Six litters within that sort of 2 year period.
Yeah, that was that allegation. Yeah, it's really sad to see. And, you know, people get very emotional about these issues in particular, and that's why the media reports them, because, you know, you're thinking, you know, these are dogs that, you know, are meant to be having a life and having a purpose, and breeding isn't their sole purpose. So when you hear those stories about dogs where it's just, you know, back to back to back to back in that period, it's just, yeah, it is heartbreaking, and it really captures the public's attention.
And for those waiting, August the 15th is the date sent down for the magistrate court in Launceston. We'll find out exactly what eventuates. Let's remember too, this, it's more than just and I say this to people when they, you know, it's more than just how many you breed, it's also the environment, the conditions that you have, how many handlers or how many people you have per breeding. Always look at these, because it's an overall picture. Responsible breeding isn't about, oh yeah, I just breed and live. It's about what sort of whelping kennels you have, what sort of views are, you know, how do you maintain that? How clean are they? It's everything together. Am I right here, Nathan?
Oh, I totally agree. And, you know, there is a bit of a belief sometimes amongst the public, amongst people, that it's really those big breeding facilities where there are, you know, those are where the issues can be. But the RSPCA often comes out and says that, you know, a small breeder with only a couple of dogs could be just as likely to breach, you know, those animal welfare guidelines as some of the bigger facilities. And some of those big facilities often have great, you know, care and attention and, you know, do it exceptionally well. But some of the smaller ones, you know, there can be breaches too.
I've been out to a couple of the large breeding facilities down here, without shouting out to those that they are, and their facilities are just top class, really. A number of handlers per bitch, a vet who...
Vet on site in some cases.
Yeah, so let's not get it wrong. Some of these do it well. They're accredited by the... I know in Victoria they get an accreditation, they get an inspection every now and again. They can have a random inspection. They go through a vigorous process to make sure that they are accredited as a breeding facility. So these people... And don't forget, the ANKC does the same. Their members are... under a code of ethics, they must follow that code of ethics. You can have someone within the member body who can visit a property if there's been an accusation and visit that breeder, and they can get banned and can get fined and can get dismissed from the association. So yeah.
I think it's about having those checks and balances in place. And sometimes, you know, those bigger facilities, because they're a bit bigger, you know, they draw a bit more attention, so they have to lift their game. So it's, you know, I think it's important for, you know, everyone to remember, it's not always the size of the facility. You know, animal welfare breaches can happen anywhere, and it's about making sure that individual dogs are well looked after, raised in the right way, bred in the right way, have the right whelping environments, and are health tested at the end of the day as well.
Excellent. So I know what you're all thinking. Did this group test with Orivet? I refused to state disclose that, Nathan, because I just don't. They're all customers and details are confidential.
Of course,
but I would be hoping that most people start off with being responsible breed, which brings to the topic of responsible. What is responsible breeders? And I suppose before we move on, I need to clarify that in no way is our Responsible Breeders Program and Right Paws Responsible Breeders Program endorsing an organization called Responsible Pet Breeders Association.
Yes, there's a lot of organizations that are cropping up at the moment and with lots of different badges. And I think the trouble is you need to sort of look beyond the name, look beyond, you know, the surface. And in some cases, some of these associations, it's very much just you can pay a set fee and you're allowed to use a badge. And that's, you know, not the right way to be doing things. You know, it's more important to be making sure that those names and those badges and those associations have some rigor behind the process. So yeah, I think as any breeder and any buyer should, you know, they need to look beyond the name and ensure that the breeders are doing the right things, which I think
I may be a responsible breeder under the Irivet banner or the Right Paw banner, and I might not be involved with any organization. Mm-hmm. I may still be responsible because I do all my health checks, I do all my vet checks, I make sure I breed within a code that exists for all pets. Mm-hmm. So we're no way are we endorsing that one organization is better than the other.
No, there's a lot to it. And I think, I mean, you know, speaking on behalf of Right Paw as well, you know, we've sort of had the view from the beginning that we look at every breeder individually, independently. We sort of drafted our own code of ethics, which, you know, is in line with the state guidelines, and every breeder that we bring on, you know, we basically assess them against that code. And, you know, we've got that code on our site. It's pretty public, so a lot of people can go and have a look at that. It basically breaks down every sort of bit of the code, from breeding and welfare practices to health, physical environment, you know, feeding, like physical condition, the documentation. There's a lot of elements to being a responsible breeder. It's not just about, you know, the little limits we're talking about, but, you know, the way you're raising the pups, the health testing you're doing, the physical environment they're raised in. So all of that is written in our code. And, you know, you can go and see, you know, why should responsible breeders do this for every single point. And that for us is sort of our way of making sure that a breeder is responsible. And, you know, I think having a bit of a closed loop where if there is an issue or a breach, we can look into it. Is a way of holding everyone to account and ensuring the community is, you know, as robust as it can be.
Now, Nathan, there's a number that some people refer to sometimes when they've got a specific number. Is that a breeder identification number? Are you aware of that?
Yeah, so that's a great question as well, because a lot of people...
This research I've done, and it's good because I'm really pinging you with these.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a reversal from the last few pods, which is good. No, look, but breeder numbers, gosh, it is a bit of a minefield, and there are so many numbers that are sort of flaunted around, quoted around. It's hard to know what they mean and what the purpose is. But if I can break it down really simply, there's probably two levels to this. The first level is that most states and territories in Australia, you need to be registered with your state in order to breed. And that's actually the case for pretty much every state. Funnily enough, there's a few WA, Northern Territory, Tasmania, where there's not a state number. But most other states will have a breeder number, and that's called a few different things. It's called a breeder identification number or a BIN number in New South Wales, in Queensland. Sometimes it's called also called a BIN number or a supply number. In Victoria, down where you are, George, it's called a source number. And they're all the same things.
The breeder registration number, a BRN, I've heard.
Yeah.
There's also, you mentioned supply number. There's an ANKC members number that you can also use.
You can, and that's, yeah, you, if you're an ANKC member, you can use that as your state number as well. So the state number is basically the minimum that you need in order to be transparent and visible. And even on Right Paw, that's that you need to have that. Otherwise, you know, no one can trace you and no one knows, you know, you're a breeder. So that's the basic level. And then if you go one level above that, that's where you generally have an association number. And that isn't compulsory. You don't need to have that. But a lot of responsible breeders will seek out getting that number. And that's because, you know, they want to be part of an association. So the ANKC will offer, will, you know, provide a membership number. The MDBA will provide a membership number. A few of, then of course you've got a few other associations which have sort of popped up in recent years and are offering numbers as well. So it can get a bit tricky for the average person to know, because you, there's all these numbers sort of flying around. But basically, the, in the simplest way to think about it, you've got your state number, which is your legal mandatory requirement. And then you've got your association number, which, you know, isn't legal, legal requirement. Obviously, some, a lot of breeders have them, but you've got to sort of get into the devil of the detail and look at, well, what does that association stand for? Because you would say potentially some association numbers definitely are worth a lot more than others.
And don't forget, if you want to really find some registered breeders in your state, you can always, you know, there are a few websites you can visit, isn't there, Nathan? Like this, right, Paul?
Yeah, that's a good plug, George. Yes.
There's also, and I'm also plugging, there's Perfect Pets if you want to look out there as well. There's a couple, and there's, you know, we're also building a responsible breeders page as well. So there's plenty of places you can look at and find them. All your breeders go through a fairly process where they're verified before they can list on. Yeah. We're sort of looking at the same thing for our responsible prep breeders, that they go through a verification. Because the problem that we've got is that we did look at something like this 10 years ago where people were under a VGA, we called it back then, and accreditation, but we found that people were just testing one dog and being listed.
Mm.
So it's about making sure that you're testing all your current breeding stock. And by testing, we're not just saying genetic disease testing. There's other hereditary conditions that you need to screen for. You need to get eye checks. You need to get hip and elbows if it's appropriate in your breed. There's plenty of other, you know, especially now with all the brachycephalic issues and some of the health issues that you can test for there as well, Nathan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of the responsible breeding. And, you know, in the case of an ANKC, look at how long they've been breeding for. You know, if someone's been breeding for 20-odd years, they're not going to show you, they wouldn't be in the industry if they were not responsible.
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, breeders get into this for a purpose and a passion. And, you know, a lot of breeders, you know, a good way, you know, to talk to a breeder and ask them about their experience is to ask them, you know, why did they start their breeding program? What was the motivation? And a lot of breeders will have a real story and a passion behind it. And, you know, that's often a good hallmark of a breeder, of a responsible breeder as well. But actually, it's a good point. You know, a question, George, we often get asked at RightPoor is, you know, do we have a membership number? You know, do we provide a membership number? And, you know, actually, up until this point, we made the decision to not provide a membership number. And the main reason for that is we just realize that there are so many membership numbers flying around. You know, is the breeding landscape going to benefit from another number that's added to that list? And what we said was, we would rather be able to provide breeders with that badge, the verified badge, and their listing on RightPoor. And so if people want to verify that a breeder is a RightPoor member, they can do that on our website and they can come and see that there. But we were worried just putting another number out into the mix. We, you know, the Australian breeder landscape doesn't need more numbers. We didn't want to confuse the public even more. So that's why, you know, a breeder will have a RightPoor verified badge. And if someone wants to check that, you can come to the website. If they're on the website, they're verified. If they're not on the website, they're not verified.
So it brings me another interesting discussion, because it's all about, sometimes I get people that have been emailed results, and then, you know, in some cases those results aren't what was in our system. So again, anyone listen to this podcast, and I'll keep saying it again, if Nathan has a dog that he has tested with our organization, ask him to share the result via our system. Do not accept a photo or a text which shows the result. Do not accept an email with a PDF attached. And the reason I say that, Nathan, is because sometimes some of these documents can be changed. That's, whereas if you
dodgy business going on.
Yes, if you share it, then whatever exists in our system is exactly what Nathan gets by an account. You can also go onto our system and log the barcode in and get some basic details about that test without any access to any other database. It just gives you the date of the test.
I love you've got that QR code that you can scan.
QR code that you can scan as well. So again, it's all part of the Responsible Breeders and Responsible Breeders program that all our responsible breeders will agree to have shared their results, will be able to view. As soon as someone texts or emails outside of the system, it's not part of our program. So again, I bring that up because unfortunately, a lot of the time we're having to put things in place for, I'd say, probably the 4% that always
do try the
wrong thing.
Yeah, it's no, and transparency is really important. And that's why, you know, again, you know, breeders often who have Facebook pages, you can see, you know, the dogs, how often they're breeding. They can sort of, again, that's a great way of, if breeders are transparent, that's always a big tick about, you know, their level of quality.
If you're buying off Gumtree, be aware you're buying off Gumtree. Yeah. If you're buying off Facebook, be aware that you're buying off Facebook. You know, you need to understand that, you know, there's reasons people sell on Gumtree and you've got to understand what they are. They're not the same as when you're purchasing off any of the other platforms or you've contacted the breeder, you've gone through their results, you've discussed, even sometimes viewing the results. I know we've had a session where we had Puppy Scam on board once, Nathan.
Yeah, we did. To Sandy, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's. I mean, look, we often have a joke, George, which is that, you know, you shouldn't buy a dog on the same website you can buy a couch. It's a completely different experience. And yeah, you know, you've got to look at these details. You've got to look at the testing, look at the, you know, who's checked them, who's holding them to account as well. But you know, an interesting point about dogs and breeding limits, and you know, just to you know, play devil's advocate a little bit as well, you know, we talked about those litter limits and 2 and 18 months, and that's sort of been in the legislation for a number of years, but there's a lot of sort of discussion around, you know, back-to-back breeding as well. And, you know, 2 and 18 months, generally dogs, you know, heat cycles are every 6 months. So, you know, in 18 months, you'll have 3 heat cycles. And, you know, in theory, you could do one break one in that 18 months, or you could do a back-to-back. You could do one and one and then a break. And there's a lot of discussion about this. This is quite a hot topic in the breeding world at the moment. And, you know, particularly a lot of, you know, research and literature that's come out in the last sort of, you know, couple of years around actually potentially back-to-back breeding is actually a better approach because it, you know, again, some particular articles have shown that it can reduce the risk of things like pyometra and endometriosis as well. And there's some really good research articles, you know, that you could have a look at if you're interested in this topic. You know, if I can mention a couple, Dr. Robert Hutchison is one who's written about this topic quite a bit. And then there's a great article as well by Joanna Kimball as well, who's written about this, which you can Google, Breeding Frequency and Dog Age. So there's a lot of interesting discussion about this. And, you know, the legislation hasn't really sort of caught up for that.
Done a lot of work here.
Well, you know what? It's
you've never done this much research in any other podcast.
Well, you know, I think we're lucky as well because we get a lot of breeders emailing in and wanting to, you know, stay on the sort of the learning curve of what the latest research is that's coming in. And, you know, it's a really important topic because I think talking about responsible breeders, they want to stay up to date. They want to learn the latest. And, you know, there are some breeders that are sitting there and saying, well, what is the best thing for my girl? And, you know, maybe it makes more sense to do sort of the, you know, have their litters earlier and then de-sex them. And then they can have the rest of, you know, their life ongoing after that. So it's a really fascinating topic. And again, a lot of interesting literature that goes into it, but we have seen that more frequently. So, you know, if you do hear about a breeder doing back-to-back breeding and you think, oh, you know, that's a concern, that's, you know, the girl isn't getting a break, you know, it's worth having that discussion with the breeder because they may actually be wanting to, you know, ensure that the risk of disease and pyometra as well is reduced.
Good. Excellent. Wow, this is good. So it's just I tell you what, this is sounding like trying to raise two kids for me too, all this responsible parenting that I've got to do, you know.
We haven't even talked about socialization and puppy culture. I mean, that's
I
many.
borrow $50 and whatever, and you know, I just keep telling my kids, it's your inheritance, spend what you want. You want to borrow 50, that's 50 less you're going to get when comes down to the crunch. Interesting. Good. So look, I've learned a bit because sometimes I get people that ring me up and, you know, they're looking at purchasing a particular puppy and they've got the results and, you know, can it guarantee me that this puppy's going to be healthy? And I just tell them, you can't guarantee any puppy. You could go and have a vet check. You could do every hereditary disease, but there is no way I can guarantee, or anyone can guarantee, or any breeder can guarantee that there's not going to be anything that eventuates through a spontaneous mutation or something that happens that's environmental or nutritional. All you can do as a breeder is ensure that you've done all your vet checks to ensure that there's been any specific conditions screened for. You've done what genetic tests you can screen for, and that's it. You can't do more than that. So a guarantee for life is just something you can't do, you can't give.
Yeah, it's you're getting into risky territory as well, and you don't want to give owners, false hope as well. But, you can say, this is the testing I've done. I've done everything in my power, physical and genetic testing.
I've been breeding Springer Spaniels for 20 years. You know, this is literally what I've been doing. There's been nothing that's come up but then, you know, it doesn't mean that you might get a puppy and it might develop epilepsy. You just don't know. You can't screen for it. You don't know. You're not aware. You might get something with cleft palate. You just don't know. You weren't aware of it. So sometimes the breeder is accused of not being responsible when in fact there are some conditions that just occur and happen randomly.
It's very true. And I think the best thing in those situations is, sometimes breeders can get defensive about that if there's a particular abnormality or a mutation or something that they've never seen in their lines. But I think for everyone to hold hands and realize, these things happen. It's okay. Work with your breeder, work with the owner, and come to a solution together. But yeah, it's one-off instances. They happen. They're one-offs, and it's important to work with the breeder, and hopefully, again, a responsible breeder will acknowledge it and come to a solution.
About it. Let them know about it. Let them know that you've
Yeah,
had
that
this
feedback
particular.
loop.
That's right. It's very important for them. So then they're aware of it. Then they may be able to see. Maybe they're able to trace it through their pedigree and see that there's been some genetic, you know, they can see where it's all coming from if it is. So don't simply go bad breeder. Talk to them. You will find that the majority of breeders will pick up their phone when you ring them and they'll want to know about it.
Responsible breeders want to always, always improve and improve their breeding program as well. So the feedback is
Yeah,
great.
the problem you've got is that, you know, if you ring that breeder and their phone's disconnected, well, then you've got a problem.
Well, hopefully there's a few different ways you can contact, but yes, gosh.
Or you've gone back to the ad that you bought it from, and they're no longer there, you know? So they're the sort of things you need to. So again, make sure you've done your research on the breeder, you've spent some time. Don't think that you're getting a puppy and it's guaranteed for life. You just can't, you know? They're unfortunate. If you could, then I'd open up, I'd be the best breed in the world. I just can't guarantee anything for life. So it's been good. So we sort of, you know, again, we don't want to bring up, there's more stories again where there was.
There's always ones where there's a few RSPCA seizures and things, but I think it just goes back to show, as a buyer, it's so important that you're supporting the right breeders that are doing the right things. And that little bit of extra work that you do as a buyer to go to choose a responsible breeder, to choose and investigate a breeder who's doing the right thing, it means that you're putting your money towards great breeders rather than supporting the ones that aren't doing the right thing. So, they talk about you got to sort of vote with your feet a little bit.
Yeah, so what I'm happy to do is if people want to email me some suggestions. So I'm, you know, Orivet's looking at what we should ask and what we should be looking for when it comes to approving someone as a responsible breeder. Please, if anyone wants to email me with suggestions, the first two people to email me, the first one will get a copy of John Bryson's beautiful booklet on, you know, defining breeds.
Mm-hmm.
And the second person, I will happily give a full breed profile DNA voucher.
Yeah. Well, that's a great prize. Let's hear from the audience.
What do you think we should be looking for when it comes to making sure that we, we're approving and asking the right questions for a responsible breeder?
Absolutely.
Let me hear your thoughts and suggestions.
Yeah, and thank you again to Wendy for suggesting such a great topic. I think it's so important to educate both breeders and buyers, but mainly, you know, the public about what they should be looking for in a great breeder. So thanks again, Wendy. Appreciate the feedback. And anyone else, if you've got great topics you want to email in for us to chat about, please do.
And I think, Nathan, our next pod will be, we're going to have a guest on.
We will. We've got a few guests lined up in the podcast. So, you know, we've heard a lot from George and I. I think it's about time we get a third voice coming back into the podcast.
I agree. All right. Well,
thanks, everyone. Hopefully you learned a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure we'll follow this story about the Labradoodle breeder and we'll, you know, in a couple months' time, more will be revealed and we'll talk about it in an upcoming podcast.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thanks, George. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Bark. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the podcast. You can visit rightpaw.com.au for your all-in-one place to find responsible, verified breeders. And you can visit orivet.com.au for all your pet genetic testing needs. Remember to stay positive and we'll see you in the next episode.